Rundown is a show where four Catholic men opine on current affairs of the world, on matters of faith, culture, and politics. It's unfiltered, it's daring, and it's certainly unapologetic.
The Rundown is a weekly news show, but it's more than that. It's a family of like-minded Catholics who are preparing for the coming chastisement.
We cover church news, politics, and current events around the world, linking them in a way no one else does, giving you the perspective no one else can.
The Rundown is not meant for children because it informs and prepares parents, young adults, seminarians, even priests watch The Rundown to know about the most pressing and evolving threats to the Catholic faith today.
Brought to you by Restoring the Faith Media. RestoringTheFaith.com.
This is The Rundown, the most watched, least trusted Catholic disinfo hour there is. This week, the big guy says Republicans are a threat to democracy. That is, if they win next week. The Fauchists float amnesty for forcing your grandmother to die alone in a nursing home. Paul Pelosi propaganda breaks down. And the Synodalists make a stunning admission. You won't even believe what they said, even after you've heard it. Hang on to your cargo shorts. This is The Rundown. Let's get going.
Look. They want everybody to forget and forgive everything that happened during the pandemic. We were all in the dark. We were all afraid. Like, nah. Like, that was like we all got kidnapped and put together on an island. And then all of y'all bastards were like, we should eat them. And we're like, what the f-? And then now they took us off the island. And we're just looking at you on the ride home like, and you're like, oh, wasn't that crazy? And we're like, nah, bitch. You tried to eat us. I didn't kick you out of those stores. I didn't ruin your job. I didn't tell you you couldn't come to the family reunion. I didn't tell you you had to drop dead of a heart attack because you didn't get the jab, so you're not welcome at this hospital. There ain't nothing to forgive on my side, baby boo. This is you problem, and we're still talking about it.
For a yellow bone, long hair star, thick and hips, come get in my car.
Then, America was saved. Embraced by the loving arms of our new president, Joe Biden. Biden has brought back kindness and decorum.
Liar, man. Look, here's the deal.
No, I wish you were in high school. I could take him behind the gym.
Biden is a voice of clarity.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him in
a voice of reason.
He is the smartest man I know.
They're going to put you all back in chains.
And he's good with numbers.
Let me start off with two words. Made in America.
$700 billion and $1,300,000,000,000.
Under his leadership, the Biden administration has brought us safety. It has brought us economic prosperity. It has empowered the next generation. And now, you have the chance to make sure it continues for another 2 years. This election day, vote for whoever the Biden administration is asking you to vote for. They know what's best. Together, we will ensure things will continue to go the way they've been going, forever and ever.
I'm Joe Biden and I approve this, you know the thing.
Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal. It's a difficult time. Ladies and gentlemen.
And they talk about inflation. You know, we're dealing with it for a whole second. Inflation is a worldwide problem right now. Because of a war in Iraq, and the impact on oil and what Russia's doing. The war in Ukraine. And, think of Iraq because that's where my son died. But the point is.
Mm-hmm. Hi, kids. There's no such thing as a boy or a girl, and I can prove it. So gather around the family, the parents, everybody, answer my questions. You either say boys or girls. Who's usually taller? Oh, boys? Okay. But you've met some short boys, right? You've met some tall girls. So usually boys are taller, but not always. Okay. Who likes the color pink? Girls? Okay. But you've met girls who don't like pink. And you met boys who do like pink. So usually girls like pink, but not always. Everything you can think of that makes a boy or makes a girl is usually but not always. And some of them are not even usually. Where does that leave you? Free. You get to like what you like. You get to be who you are. Maybe you're even like me and you're not a boy or a girl.
It's Monday night and here's what's happened.
B, what are you doing under my desk?
Well, under the desk is kind of my thing. I mean,
but here's the thing. You can stay for now, but when it comes time to voting, you're going to have to get up. Because you've got climate change legislation on the ballot, you've got gun safety, and if we can elect more pro-choice members of Congress, we can reinstitute Roe versus Wade as the law of the land. So you can't stay here. You're going to have to take a little bit of time to vote.
Is now a bad time to say that I voted for McCain in 2008?
As long as you voted.
Okay. Go to iwillvote.com and I will see you at the polls.
When did racism against white people become okay? Joe Biden put white people last in line for COVID relief funds. Kamala Harris said disaster aid should go to non-white citizens first. Liberal politicians block access to medicine based on skin color. Progressive corporations, airlines, universities, all openly discriminate against white Americans. Racism is always wrong. The left's anti-white bigotry must stop. We are all entitled to equal treatment under law. America First Legal paid for this ad.
But I was a little concerned today, I'm going to be honest, when I saw Hillary Clinton bad-mouthing me. And she looked angry and actually scared and just completely unrelated. I want you to know, just in case you're wondering, I'm in perfect health. My brakes on my car are in good shape, and I'm not suicidal. And we're going to win this thing on Tuesday.
We're asked to take it down.
Who are you touching our flags? You have no right to do this.
You are directed to take it down. What? The dean's office has requested.
You're targeting us. Absolutely not. I have every right to record, and you know that. This is America. We have the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, freedom of expression. I don't know why you're taking my flags down.
Call the dean. Call the dean. I want to speak to
you. You were told you can go down and see the dean, so you can go ahead and do that.
You're not going to tell anybody else anything. I told you, once you tell everyone else to remove it, then we'll consider it. But, like, why do you target us specifically?
Sir, you support this?
Specifically.
This is, you guys are targeting our property. I don't know why you're doing this.
The other flags
back up.
No, why are you touching my flags? Did you pay for these flags?
You were asked to take them down.
Don't touch my flags.
You're
going to pay for
them?
You're going
to
pay for them?
You were asked to take them down. And you were told that they would be taken down.
Are you guys from...
So are you going to take down the other flags?
Everyone's being asked to take them down.
So they're being asked, but we're but our flags are being ripped off. Right? They're being asked, but our flags are being ripped off.
Why are we forced?
You think that's right? That's right?
You can go speak with the dates.
I don't know who you are. For all I know, you're a stranger and you're ripping my flags off. So what about that flag right there? Why don't you guys take that one first?
I'm waiting to hear directives from our deans. A message is going to be going out.
What do you mean you're waiting to hear from our dean? You just took our flags down.
Okay.
Excuse me. I'll take my flags. Thank
They're
you
They're
going
to go to
much.
The dean's office.
I'll take my flags.
Do not touch me.
I bought these. You're not taking my property. This is stealing. That's stealing. I paid
right
for this. No, the college does not have the right to take my flags. Okay. This is mine.
Okay.
And that was ridiculous.
Nobody has the right to live their lives being protected from offense or from insult or from hurt feelings. It is an occupational hazard of living in society. And if you really can't take it, become a hermit.
By releasing
Oh my goodness, so much to talk about tonight and so little time. Guys, welcome to the program. So nice to be with you again. Wake up, because it is time for us to get into the rundown. Top story tonight: Biden is telling us that the Republicans are a threat to democracy.
I stand here today. There are candidates running for every level of office in America, for governor, Congress, Attorney General, Secretary of State, who won't commit. They will not commit to accepting the results of election that they're running in. This is a path to chaos in America. It's unprecedented. It's unlawful. And it's un-American.
It's unlawful and it's un-American, Ryan. You maybe have committed a crime, a thought crime, and let's be careful about what we are allowed to say, because we might commit a YouTube crime as well.
No doubt, offending Mama Susan there. But, you know, he's right. It is unprecedented for, it's not just the one party saying the other party is wrong, the other party's got the wrong idea, they're taking us in the wrong direction. It's their other party is criminal if they dare to ask for something like election integrity. You know, and I tweeted about this, but when I was a kid and I started paying attention to elections, that would have been around, 1990, 1988, somewhere around there. They counted the ballots in one night. They didn't have voting machines. They didn't have computers to do all their work. But they sure managed to count all the ballots in one night. That somehow that can't be done anymore. Somehow you have to have so many days. And if you question that, you're engaging in dangerous disinformation, right? You just look at the Dark Brandon speech. You know, I think it kind of set that tone for which everything's taken. It's like there is a message being crafted and driven home also by the media of kind of the histrionic reaction to not getting your way that we've seen ever since Trump got in office. The histrionic orange man bad, Trump derangement syndrome, right? Which is a real thing, right? And not being a Trump guy, I'm still looking at him like, I just don't like a lot of his policies, but I really don't care about the guy. And we got these people flipping out, losing it. And this is the next stage, how we cannot possibly let all these things happen. And you see the congressman up there, why abortion's going to be illegal everywhere. Women are going to go to jail. There'll be no birth control. I was like, that would be so cool if Republicans were that based, but they're not.
But not even close. Not even close. We can't do it. Ladies and gentlemen, Bolsonaro down in Brazil used to draw crowds literally in the seven figures, millions of people. But we're told that he lost. We're told that, well, he lost his election because free and fair elections happen around the world, right, Brother Martin? Everywhere, it's all free and fair. And if you don't accept the results that the news media tell you, it's unlawful, says Dark Brandon.
Well, that's it. I mean, we have a president right now who didn't campaign. He just set it out in his basement and got like some 80 million votes, more votes than any president in history. You know, this is beyond fishy. This is beyond absurd. Obviously, this happened. And it kind of goes incongruent when being told by the president of the United States, just accept the election results. We're being told by the media is being controlled by a certain group of people, that a red wave's coming. At the same time, the president says, listen, everybody just needs to accept the election results as they are. What's coming? I don't exactly think it's what we all know what should be coming, precisely because of the way that the situation has been for the last 2 years. But this is the way things are. There's no free elections anymore. Democracy is
really
is a
fascinating. It is really fascinating, James, Philip, that the president of the United States is now telling us two things. He's saying we're not going to be able to count all the votes on one night. Everyone needs to be patient. If you don't accept the results of the election, you're unlawful and it's un-American. But we're headed into what is considered to be a wave election for the Republicans. I'm almost wondering if we don't see a red wave or if it's stymied somehow, then if anyone questions that outcome, which is an unlikely, statistically unlikely outcome, then we're going to face punitive actions just like the J6 people.
You're muted.
Oh dear, we have no audio. We'll have to go back to you and get your brilliant insight on that one. Here's Tucker analyzing what the fake Catholic usurper in chief actually had to say about all this.
The conventional view among people who follow politics is that the Democratic Party is about to suffer a humiliating repudiation in next week's midterm elections. It seems very likely as of now that Democrats will lose both houses of Congress. And that's just the beginning of their pain. Polls suggest that even places that supported Joe Biden by a wide margin in 2020 are about to swing dramatically against him and his party. A week from today, New York, of all places, could have a Republican governor. The last time there was an election in New York, Biden won the state by 23 points. What we're seeing is what political scientists refer to as a realignment. And there's no mystery as to why it's happening. Democrats failed conclusively. No group in American history has done a worse job running this country than the neoliberals currently in charge. They're vicious, they're intolerant, and they are utterly corrupt. But above all, they are incompetent. In less than 2 years, it is not an overstatement to say they have run this country into the ground, wrecking our economy, desecrating our military, and opening the borders of the United States to more than 5 million lawbreakers. The destruction they have wrought is so profound, it's hard to describe. So, of course, there will be consequences for that. In a country with democratic elections, how could this party stay in power? Honestly, we don't know. But maybe Joe Biden does. Tonight, Biden traveled across the city of Washington to Union Station. Built by Teddy Roosevelt more than 100 years ago, Union Station was for generations one of the most beautiful public buildings in this country. Under Joe Biden, it has become a homeless encampment. A place that is too filthy and too dangerous for Starbucks. Standing at this monument to his own failures, Biden proceeded to do what he now so commonly does, bark at the rest of us for our moral failures. The guy who showered with his daughter is telling you you're a bad person. Tonight's topic, democracy. Here's a taste of it.
Yet now, extreme MAGA Republicans aim to question not only the legitimacy of past elections, but elections being held now. And into the future. Into the future. The extreme MAGA, the extreme MAGA Republican Party, which is a minority of that party, as I said earlier, but is this driving force, is trying to succeed where they failed in 2020, to suppress the right of voters and subvert the electoral system itself.
Well, that's very weird if you think about it. So here we are, less than a week before the Democratic Party is expected to suffer overwhelming losses in the midterm elections. And here you have the leader of that party, Joe Biden, commanding you not to complain about the election results. The election results. Why is that? Well, let's see. Here's Joe Biden telling you that thanks to the changes, the many changes Democrats have made to our system of voting, all of which make voter fraud easier to commit, we may not know the results of the elections for a few days. But don't be alarmed. Everything is completely on the level. And whatever you do, do not ask questions, or else you're a criminal. Watch.
We want Americans to vote. We want every American's voice to be heard. Now we have to move the process forward. We know that more and more ballots are cast in early voting or by mail in America. And we know that many states don't start counting those ballots until after the polls close on November 8th. That means in some cases, we won't know the winner of the election for a few days, until a few days after the election.
takes time to count all legitimate ballots in a legal and orderly manner. It's always been important for citizens in democracy to be informed and engaged. Now it's important for citizens to be patient as well. That's how it's supposed to work.
What is this? What is going on here? We're a week from the election, 6 days. Biden could have given, would under normal circumstances have given, a speech about his policies and how they've made your life better. He tried to convince you this country is actually in better shape than it looks, and he did that. He could, in other words, have made a pitch for your vote based on what he has done. That's what politicians do in functioning democracies. They try to convince you to support them on the basis of what they have done for you. That is democracy. That's not at all what Joe Biden just did. Instead, Biden commanded you to accept the election results whenever they arrive, no matter what they may be. It was bizarre, and it did not inspire confidence.
Extremely concerning, James. Extremely concerning. Mic check with James. We have your audio now. Oh, man. This is so sad. We got to do a mic check with James. It is extremely concerning, though, Ryan, and I'm going to cut over to you. The president of the United States saying, whatever happens, you better accept it, period, end of story. That's it.
That's it. No more discussion. You will accept it. You know, it's funny. It's like, oh, we want dialogue. We want listening. But you're going to accept whatever we tell you. And that's more or less been, I think, the message of the Biden administration for quite a while. Where, you know, a definition of a recession. Well, it's this because we said so. And like so many things, the fact checking, the Ministry of Truth that they had set up with the singing lady, you know, temporarily, that kind of backfired on them. So they kind of pulled that back a little bit, just a little bit, still going on. It's just not overtly going on. It follows from that, you know, we're telling you what's going to happen and you're going to obey. And guess what? We've got the media to reinforce it. I mean, let's just dial back to 2020 a little bit. The president of the United States at the time, who in until January 2020 was Donald J. Trump, the media decided you did not get to hear his voice. In lockstep, the media all said, okay, yeah, we're just going to shut him down so nobody can hear him. I mean, he's still the guy with the nuclear codes. He's still the guy who is ostensibly in charge of the country until the next inauguration and the transfer of power, and yet he's not allowed to speak now. He's got to be shut up. He's banned off Twitter. He's banned off all the modes of communication. Think about the power in that alone. So now we come to the next game that we're going to have, where they're going to come in and say, oh, yeah, the Fox News affiliates have already been doing this in Arizona, where they've called the election for the Democratic candidate. Oh, it was a glitch. I mean, they're telegraphing that on purpose because they want to create that division. They want to create people screaming about election fraud and then use that as, you know, the excuse to bring in the solution, which is to start locking people up, or at least high profile people at first. And then it'll be a crime. It'll be PayPal might fine you $250,000, right? Something of that sort.
You'll be summarily dismissed from YouTube. If on the Wednesday morning you wake up and you say, this doesn't look right, I don't like this, I don't like ballots at 3 a.m, if you just say, hey, I ask questions about it, fair questions, you will be summarily dismissed from polite company. Meanwhile, these are the types of people that they're running for office. This is Fetterman making his closing argument on CNN for why you should vote for him, because he's the guy to tackle inflation.
Well, let's talk about inflation, because that's a big concern for voters. What do you think the biggest cause of inflation is, and should the Biden administration be doing more?
No, I just do. I think that simply is also, Leah, let's talk about the trillions in massive tax cuts to the corporate tax structure as well. True, you know, trillions of dollars that have added to the deficit, and now they still want to support those as well. True, I think in terms of being very serious about addressing inflation is making sure that those rates are brought back into a line with what they should have been, where they're able to fight the deficit.
where the rates are brought back in to where they're able to fight the deficit, and it is the trillions in tax cuts to we don't know who, Brother Martin, that is the cause of inflation. This man wants to be a United States Senator, one of the 50 most powerful people on Capitol Hill, representing the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And if he wins and you don't think it looks right, you may go to jail for asking a question. That's what we're being told.
Absolutely. Which only goes to prove that, you know, we just need to vote harder, guys. Vote harder. You know, it doesn't work. These political parties put up their puppets. They support their puppets. And if they want someone to be in office because they can manipulate them, what better people to do than stroke victims or people that are old with dementia? And I think that's exactly what we're seeing, is that they just put up puppets and then they manipulate the puppets because it's easier to control by a group controlling one particular person to do what they want to do. And yeah, if you know the truth, then you're a threat. You're ultimately a threat if you know the truth. So you need to be like those in the movie and The Giver, where we just obey, never question anything. Just do what we're told, because that's the way society functions, and society will function easier and smoother if nobody just questions the people behind the screen that are telling us what to do. And that's that. I mean, this is
your last warning. Your last warning. Don't question anything.
The party is the only power they have. Once that party has been rejected, they will be nothing but what they already are. Sad middle-aged mediocrities with tragic personal lives and nothing interesting to say. So everything is on the line for them. They can't lose. And because they can't lose, they're now getting explicit about what if. Here's Ron Klain, Joe Biden's all-powerful chief of staff, issuing an explicit threat to anyone who might be thinking of voting the wrong way next Tuesday.
The president decided a few days ago that it was important to issue one final warning on this issue, to make very clear, to leave no doubt, that we have people out there still peddling the big lie. People now raising the issue of election denial in this election.
One final warning? One final warning? Really? Who do you think you're talking to, Ron Klain? Illiterate villagers? We're Americans. We are free people. You don't get to warn us of anything, much less for the last time. This is your final warning. Yeah, don't think so. You don't get to say that, Ron Klain. You don't get to say anything like that ever. Because this is a democracy, an American democracy, not a Soviet democracy. In our system, you don't get to issue orders to the rest of us on the eve of an election. No, you beg for our consent, because our consent is the only legitimacy you have. This is our government. It's not yours. You are the servant. We are the.
I had to turn it off. It was getting a little too boomerish for me. But I mean, Tucker makes a good point, though. I mean, these people are acting like tyrants. Someone needs to point it out. The veneer of democracy, the veneer of majority rule in this country has been thin and marred and really lacking, totally absent for some time now, right? So it's really no surprise to me that on the eve of an election, you have the White House basically compelling everyone, saying that, you know, it will be unlawful for you to question the results of next week. And by the way, those results will come in when we tell you that they're in, not when they're normally in. And you'll have to be patient about it. And if you ask any questions about it, you're un-American.
Seems like if we do anything, it makes sense you're un-American at this point. But yeah, that's really where it's going to go. And and then you have like the January 6th parallels. That's the gift that keeps on giving to them, to keep making that, no matter how ludicrous the comparison to J6, they'll still keep pushing that if you question the election, you're going to overthrow the government. It's like,
Did you know that having a homosexual relationship at 2 a.m. while fighting with a hammer is also like January 6th?
All this happened after the assault. And it just, it's hard to even say. After the assailant entered the home asking, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Those are the very same words used by the mob when they stormed the United States Capitol on January the 6th, when they broke windows, kicked in the doors, brutally attacked law enforcement, roamed the corridors,
hunting for officials and erected gallows to hang the former Vice President Mike Pence. It was an enraged mob that had been whipped up into a frenzy by a president repeating over and over again the big lie that the election of 2020 had been stolen. It's a lie that fueled the dangerous rise in political violence and voter intimidation over the past 2 years.
Did you catch that sleight of hand there, brother? We were talking about hammer fighters, and hammer fighters are, they're a unique breed. They're absolutely disordered, and they like to hang out in their underwear at 2 o'clock in the morning. But that's a conspiracy theory, of course. We went from hammer fighting at 2 o'clock in the morning to the big lie, and somehow this is all Trump's fault. Did you see what he did there?
Of course, using anything and everything that hits the news to blame it on Trump, to blame it on MAGA Republicans, and ultimately smearing them and making them essentially terrorists. Essentially, that's exactly what they're trying to do is make MAGA Republicans terrorists. Though, I mean, we remember one time early on when in Chicago, I think there was someone with a mental disorder on a subway or something wearing a MAGA hat that got hit, literally his scalp. Some woman attacked him. And he got his scalp literally with a knife taken off just because he was wearing a MAGA hat. If we're paying attention to the news, we know exactly what they're doing. They're making us victims. They're making people that want a conservative government terrorists. And this is exactly the demonizing, the making people less than human is exactly what we've seen in other regimes, maybe in the 1930s or even before. And making them seem like terrorists, giving the society prejudices to constantly shoot at these people, so that if you don't want to be affiliated with this prejudice, you simply renounce these beliefs and you go to the left, or you have to suffer the consequences of a whole, you know, millions of people believing this prejudice and acting against you accordingly.
Isn't it weird that this guy DePappy that allegedly attacked Paul Pelosi? He definitely attacked him, and committed violence against his body. But we don't actually know the extent of the violence. It's weird that he's an illegal alien, though, isn't that?
Highly unsurprising thing about David DePappy. He's also an illegal alien. Today, Fox's Bill Malugin learned that DePappy, who was originally from Canada, has long overstayed his visa. So he is currently in this country illegally. So to restate, the perpetrator in this violent crime against Paul Pelosi is a mentally ill, drug-addicted, illegal alien nudist who takes hallucinogens and lives in a hippie school bus in Berkeley with a BLM banner and a pride flag out front. So take those uncontested facts and let them rattle around your brain for a moment until a recognizable pattern emerges. What does this sound like to you? If you guessed, this is obviously a textbook case of homegrown right-wing extremism, well, then obviously you've been watching a lot of cable news today.
I'm going to show one of those cable news clips, but they're coming unhinged. Literally, there are two narratives being portrayed out there. There's the true narrative, those uncontested facts that Tucker talks about, Ryan. And then there are the talking heads on the other networks that are trying to convince everybody that this man, DePappy, who runs around in his underwear with Paul Pelosi and hangs out, you know, hammer fighting all night, that actually that's everything I just told you was a lie.
Within minutes, in fact, of the news breaking, they were arguing that this was a rabid Trump supporter, and you saw that the blue check marks on Twitter come out, and oh yeah, this is another MAGA Republican attacking, you know, Paul Pelosi. But then, you know, it's interesting they don't release details about this. They don't release very few details anyway. A lot of what's come out has come out through leaks, and it appears to be the type of thing where, if I had to opine on what actually happened, it would appear that, you know, Paul Pelosi hired some kind of gay escort. It all turned bad somehow, maybe some drug fueled behavior, who knows what.
And are you saying that hammer fighters
would do? Yeah, I guess there's a certain level where I can understand a little bit, but
hammer fighting is a dangerous sport. Hammer fighters are inherently violent.
But then they spin this narrative to try to deflect in every possible way. when, you know, if it really was anybody was even remotely conservative, that you could backtrack a few visits on their web browsing history to a couple of conservative sites, I can guarantee you it would be 24/7 news. But they're doing their best to kind of keep it quiet and spin it in different directions. And
no, you're right. Here's what they're not telling us, brother. You're right. This is crazy. They're not telling us, like, the cops weren't wearing body cams. The attack on Paul Pelosi happened after the police arrived.
Security cameras were all turned off.
All the cameras were off. There's no security. This is the third in line woman to the president of the United States. Paul Pelosi is hanging out in his underwear with this other gay guy. And they're peaceful and just, you know, having a little late night hammer fight, you know, and then the police arrive. And then it's only after the police arrive and they're unable to restrain this man who goes into some frenzy and is able to attack Paul Pelosi. So the police get there. There's no sign of a break-in. There's no security footage. This is like when Maxwell commits suicide in prison. You know, we're going to find out that there was no security on her either. And that, Epstein, there's no security cameras on him either. It's like, how can it possibly be that people who are under Secret Service protection, this guy is able to, why was he in the house? How did he get in the house? You're a terrorist, brother. If you ask those questions, you're like one of these people you might believe in Pizzagate if you ask those questions. That's what they're trying to say.
On Pizzagate cabal style stuff. The idea that the world is secretly run by this new world order, and it is trying to censor you. It's trying to prevent the world from seeing what's really going on. And that Nancy Pelosi and people like that, those people in the QAnon spaces right now, those people are at the top of that sphere. They are at the top of that pecking order when it comes to how people believe in conspiracy theories. And I do want to stress this. Right now, trending on Twitter mm-hmm. is the lie about this guy. It's the lie that...
It's trending.
It's trending on Twitter, as we speak, because Elon Musk pushed it on Saturday. Or yesterday, sorry. I just want to make it clear how they got to this place. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, lies on the internet move faster than the truth. And that's in part why there are all these safeguards that Elon Musk is trying to take down on Twitter right now. The lies that were pushed were from bad pieces of information they found. For example, they said that Paul Pelosi was in his underwear. Of course he was, 2:30 in the morning at the time he was attacked. That led them to believe this was a lover's quarrel between two different people that knew each other. The reason they believe they knew each other is because the police put out a statement saying that they didn't really know who opened the door. So that led them to believe there was a third person in the house. Mm-hmm. So from there, there was this world building on the pro-Trump internet. What could be the opposite of reality here? And the opposite of reality they came up with was these two people were having a lover's quarrel in a house and the police sort of intruded on us. It's fundamentally incorrect. It was pushed by the richest man in the world. And then yesterday it was pushed by Donald Trump Jr., who posted a picture of underwear and a hammer and said it's a Halloween costume for Paul Pelosi. If we don't cut this out right now, not just the normalization of violence, but the idea that reality can't even exist anymore because it cannot catch up to the lies on the internet. I'm not a scholar on authoritarian history, but I've read Hannah Arendt. I've read all of these people. Mm-hmm. This is how it gets really bad. This is the start of something that gets really, really bad.
Did you catch that now they're blaming Twitter? They're blaming Elon Musk.
And Rand?
Yeah, right. So. Let's talk about Twitter for 1 second, just because these people who claim to propose free speech, right? This is the left, liberals. They were the ones burning bras on Berkeley's campus. They were the ones burning flags. This is free speech. We can say whatever we want. We can publish pornography. And if you don't like it, you don't have to read it. But we have every right to say it. The more shocking, the more grotesque, the more blasphemous, the better. Now suddenly there's a contraction in the liberal wing of the American political establishment, in which nobody actually believes in free speech anymore because, well, Twitter is just too big. And, well, since Elon owns Twitter, we're not free speechers anymore.
It used to be that you could stand in Times Square right behind us and you could shout whatever you wanted. But you could only get 30, 40, 50 people around you, right? Yep. Twitter's different.
The amplification.
All that it's the piece that she's talking about. And so when you see these kind of heinous stories, conspiracy theories about a Paul Pelosi situation that seems to lead to violence in other situations as a result of it.
Yep.
The question is, do the companies bear some responsibility for trying to rein that in? And I would argue they do. And to put it on, but to also put it on them to decide what's false is also a complicating factor.
Well, but exactly. So if what I would say, if the company is going to take down something as false speech, the company bears the burden of proof to show that it was false. History teaches us, and by the way, not just history over the last 100 years, history over the last 2 to 3 years teaches us that many of our current beliefs will be modified in some way.
Why would we want to put the responsibility on the person who's speaking?
Well, I would say put it on the responsibility of the body politic to say that, you know what, we're going to debate these ideas in the open, may the best ideas win, may the best arguments win. And Andrew, I will just say we're conflating a couple different things here. I think the way you treat the misinformation point is different from the way you treat the category of hate speech. I think you can't have hate speech as a category because all opinions are allowed.
I got one more for you.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of people who deny the election results of this last election, some of whom, by the way, look like they may win next week. Do you think that there should be people correcting the record?
I think there should be people correcting the record through free speech and open debate, not through silencing them and not through censorship. I mean, throughout our history, I'm proud to say we live in a country where you can go out and burn the flag and say, you know what, war on America. This is a country where part of burning the flag is what gives that the meaning, is the fact that we live in a country where that is allowed. And if we lose that principle, we lose the very principle we're fighting for in the first place. So you got to draw this distinction between saying I disagree vehemently, but still allow you the right to speak.
How concerned are you?
Conflating again.
How concerned are you with either democracy or the very idea that there are large parts of the population who believe things that are just factually untrue today?
So I am deeply concerned about threats to democracy, but I think those threats to democracy, Andrew, are plural. And one of those threats to democracy is the centralized determination of truth. By the way, and here's a dimension we haven't talked about, where the government itself is now coordinating with Twitter, with Facebook, et cetera, to direct critics of the government to be silenced. This is something that I think is also a threat to democracy, where you have a government using private companies to censor speech. So I think they're plural in nature.
We've now gotten to the point where libertarians and conservatives are defending burning of the United States flag. Burning the flag is protected speech, and now conservatives are standing up for that, right, Ryan? Whereas liberals are saying, well, right. No, we can't have that. We can't burn any flag. We can't do anything that's unpopular because we got to shut it down.
Funny. It's like a flip from where I was when I was a kid.
Yeah. You know,
that was pink commie stuff to burn a flag. And it was, the proper patriotic thing to do to fight, flag burning. It should be a crime, et cetera. I mean, my own view on that is that, I mean, you're talking about the symbol of your own country. It's like, I'm just in a proper and traditional sense, irrespective of like how I view government myself. It's like a form of treason, really. It's like a perduelo to burn the very symbols of your country down. During the Peloponnesian War, Alcibiades was leading an expedition to Syracuse, and they sent a later group of soldiers to arrest him and bring him back to Athens on suspicion that he had defaced symbols of the patria, symbols of the city itself, that are equivalent to the flag. I mean, they're phallic symbols, but anyway, that's the way paganism ruled. So this was considered per duello, treason. Right, to do a thing like that. So, I mean, whatever protest you want, and I'm certainly not a huge fan of our government or even our constitution, to be honest. But burning the flag is like that's just a bridge too far because it's, it is like that sense it classically understood that would be like a form of treason. So, but it's funny you see this flipping around where to go absolute free speech because they're under the gun and they want to have an ability to say so they're going to defend something that formally they held, like I just laid it out, was not just, shouldn't just be illegal, but it's morally wrong. Now they're saying, well, it's okay because we have to let all kinds of speech. It's like Sean Hannity years back. This is like 2002, having Howard Stern on his program, letting Howard Stern spew all sorts of filth. And say, yeah, I don't agree with what you say, but I stand with you because I support free speech. It's that same type of thing where we're going to, go so far in trying to defend our ability to criticize an authoritarian government, that we're going to allow evil and vice as a good, lest we don't get to say what we want to say.
It is as if we are moving circular movement down the toilet, you know, as it were. And we may actually reach the point, as Bishop Williamson articulates, where things are going to get so bad that we're just going to beg for Christ the King.
This vote, there's so little faith left in England, little faith left in France. You talk to a Frenchman, he will say, France is gone. You talk to a Spaniard who has his eyes open, he will say, Catholic Spain is dead. Italy is the same thing. It's a lack of faith. It's a loss of the Catholic faith that allows the anti-Catholics, the enemies of God, to do what they like with the godless generation, with the godless nations. Jesus Christ remains king. He's waiting for the poison to play out, so to speak. He's waiting for the poison to work through the system to the point where souls will, of their own free will, call for our Lord to be king again.
Seems like that's what we might be living through, to be honest. The poison is working its way through every nation, and the United States are we have a patent on the poison, and we make sure, and we have mandates to make sure that everyone gets it. James, let's do a quick audio check with you now that you're back with us.
Can you hear me? Yes. Faye, bring up the volume a bit.
I'll try to edit your mic while you speak.
How's this?
We can hear you. We can hear the microphone. We can hear you touching the microphone.
Well, I'm speaking into it.
Okay, we got you.
Sounds good.
That works.
We're trying to lift up black voices here, people.
Oh, man.
Do I have to move closer? Is this working?
It sounds better closer, but it works.
It's good.
At your distance.
Closer is better. James, do you think Bishop Williamson is right in his assertion that things just have to get so bad that people on their own free will beg for Christ the King?
Oh, absolutely. That's the only way people will be able to turn back to God. God always wants to help those who help themselves. And if people don't realize they need help, why does God need to do anything for us? And it's a story that's been told time and time again, especially in the scriptures. You know, people have to cry on to God in their misery so that God can lift them up from their misery. They first have to understand and to confess that they have fallen short and they need God's help. And that's exactly what Bishop Williamson is saying there. And things are getting bad, but they need to get so bad that people really have no other option, and they have to force themselves to turn back to God, whom they've decided is not anyone to give any attention, which is unfortunate. And I think that'll happen sooner than later. You saw what happened in 9/11. People for about 30 seconds decided to bring back God into their lives. They prayed, they went back to church, but we have fallen back into patterns that are worse since just after 9/11, you know, and it's not encouraging to say the least. But Bishop Williamson is absolutely right. We definitely will need God's help, but God will only give us the help we need if we ask Him, and we have to ask Him earnestly. Right now, there's not a whole lot of earnest prayers out there, prayers for change. So that God gives us something, not so that we have that conversion, so that we can love and serve Him better.
So does that beg the question that things must get worse, and they will invariably get worse?
Must get worse, absolutely.
Well, that's encouraging. This is the rundown where we're bringers and bearers of, good news at all times, right?
What do you think we need to do?
Oh, we need a revolution, and we need it now, not later, now.
All right, we need something. We need something. All right, things are getting bad. They're going to get worse. But you know what? Here's a bit of good news.
Not all of them. Like, another thing is find a, I don't know where you go to church. I don't know how many options there are where you go. But one thing is if you have a Latin mass anywhere around you within like an hour's drive, or even farther. It's worth going to that. You're going to find a lot of young people there. You are going to find young single women. You're going to find the basest of all Catholics that are going to be there, including the women. So,
okay, this is Matt Walsh.
Yeah, Matt Walsh just lifted up Kennedy Hall 10,000 times by using the phrase or the word base three times.
Basest. He's the basest. Mm-hmm. I thought we were moving past calling things that base and woke. I thought base and woke was like so 2016.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Matt Walsh, he works at the Daily Wire. He works for Ben Shapiro. And, you know. It's a good thing, I think. It's a good thing that he goes to Latin Mass. Michael Knowles goes to the Latin Mass as well. And it's a good thing, I think, in generally speaking, that mainstream so-called voices in the conservative movement are promoting the Latin Mass. It is a little bit disingenuous of them to do so, though, given for whom they work. So nothing is 100% pure, Ryan. But people are going into they have issues with it. What are the issues people have with this comment?
In terms of, well, whose issues? Are we talking about people who are mad that he said it or mad about who he works for?
Well, I think it's the same people. I think, you know, look, at a certain point, people are like, well, this guy's a coward. Look, we have a commenter saying that he's a coward. Mm-hmm. People have issues with Matt Walsh promoting the traditional Latin Mass on Daily Wire.
I don't have an issue with him promoting it. We've had issues with the Daily Wire. We've mentioned, obviously, Ben Shapiro and his, continued, being an Orthodox Jew, being, you know, somewhat anti-Catholic. Even if he's willing to say, well, we'll tolerate Catholics and the crusade to be conservative and whatnot. But, you know, we've been critical of him here, but I think, you know, he has more reach, and that might be the gateway that gets a lot of people to start looking at it that otherwise wouldn't have looked at it. And, you know, is Matt Walsh integrally good? No. Like, he believes in evolution. There's some other things that obviously we don't agree with him on. I think he did a fantastic job with that documentary, What is a Woman? Because it's making the left melt down and the groomers melt down. So, I mean, I can't get mad about that. But, yeah, Daily Wire is not integrally good. It's not something we 100% wholesale support. So it's not like we got to suddenly say, oh, Matt Walsh is the greatest just because he said something positive. But I do think, you know, we can at least take it for what it is. And that I think it could have positive effects of people, you know, looking into it, going to it, taking the red pill, you know, as it were. And so getting into, you know, discovering the tradition of the church. And so I get why people are mad about it or criticizing him for it, given, because Daily Wire is not this integrally good thing that we all have to run out and support now. But we can at least take the win, even if it's not unmitigated, you know, good news. Because I do think it will cause people to look at it who otherwise might not have looked at it.
Sure. It's not an unqualified win, but it's a win. You know, it's not a clean win. It's not a clean hit. I think people are recognizing the fact that it's not like he's a trad. He's not a rad trad. Neither he nor Michael Knowles. I mean, they're both kind of like just grifters, and they're both kind of boomerish about, you know, get out the vote and vote harder and all this stuff. Red way, woo, you know. But at the end of the day, a big voice, Brother Martin, do you have a problem with a big voice recommending the Latin Mass, even if the reason why he recommends it is that you're going to find a young single girl there?
To be honest, absolutely not. to be honest, many vocations have started with someone getting into their faith precisely because they saw a girl who was very into her Catholic faith and they wanted to impress a girl, so they started going to Mass. And then what started about, you know, the guy trying to impress a girl, so he started going to Mass, ended up him entering religious life at the end of the day. So, I mean, God could use several different things, but especially getting the news out there that the Latin Mass still exists and getting people to go on Google and find the closest one nearest to them. That's absolutely a good thing. Especially, I mean, if you just go on Google and find nearest Latin Mass, you'll run into SSPX or whatever else, and so you'll be introduced to a whole new world. And so I think it's very good that they're introducing Catholics to a whole new world, because a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, they didn't even know this world existed, and it was just them trying to find an open church that led them to this new world. And so if there's any Daily Wire listeners that didn't know that this world existed, simply by him mentioning it, they're introduced to this world, fine. We'll take it from there.
And by the way, James, it is objectively true, and one of our more astute listeners is pointing this out. If you go to any of the Latin mass communities, you are going to see an abundance of single young people who are there. I mean, it's not a bad place to go look for a wife if you're looking for a wife, better than looking at the bar, right? I mean, there are way worse places to go to try to find a wife than a traditional Latin mass. In fact, pretty much anywhere besides a traditional Latin mass is probably a subpar place to do it.
That's true. You know, I, in the past, when I was, when I had a lot more single friends, I said to them, hey, you know, what are you doing? You know, you guys need to go to traditional Latin mass. There are lots of options for you there. You know, most of the young girls that are there for good reason. And just like Brother Martin was saying, it's, you know, if there's a conviction in someone, you know, to do something good, whether it comes through a friend or someone who could be a friend, it's always good because then they have someone to impress, even though it's what might seem initially as an ulterior motive, but then sooner or later that becomes a motive that is intended on the good, the true, and the beautiful. And that in fact leads to what Brother was saying, to vocations and to married life and to, multiplying and filling the earth.
Yeah. Let's stay on religion for a second and the state of the church. Diane Montagna, who's one of the investigative journalists who's stationed in Rome full time, put herself before this panel of synodalists. I don't really know what to call these people. Synodists, sinners. I don't know. Synodality, supercalifragilistics. And she asked them a very pointed question. This is the most shocking thing that I think has come out of this whole process so far.
Frank. During your Frascati meeting, from the social media platforms of the Synod Secretariat, I'm thinking specifically of the Twitter account of Synod at synod.va. There were several images put out by the Synod Secretariat, praised as works of art. These weren't simply objective statements, but positive praise for these works of art. Cartoon-like in their character, perhaps you remember them, most of which represented ideas that would be contrary to the Catholic faith. One in particular made the rounds, a group of people in front of a church, one with a woman dressed in a chasuble as a priest, which of course is against the faith. Another, I'm not sure if it was a male or a female, and I mean that sincerely, standing in the center with an LGBT pride shirt. And these were praised as works of art by the Synod Secretariat itself on social media. The Synod Secretariat, I think, as a consequence, lost a lot of credibility and trust in the eyes of many Catholics. That's not my judgment. I think normally the Synod account does not get many replies. In this case, there were hundreds of responses to these images. Mostly negative, probably, to be generous, 95% negative. Is the Synod Secretariat listening to these responses of the Catholic faithful? And how would you respond to them?
Their response was, nothing is off the table. That was the response. Nothing is off the table. So Diane clearly points out, I'll go to your brother first. She points out that these images are promoting the idea of women priests. They are promoting the idea of the alphabet people. And look, you don't even see a faithful Catholic in these cartoons that are being pushed by the Synod, by the Secretariat. And the response is that none of this stuff is off the table. When Dr. Anthony Stein refers to the Synod on Synodality as Vatican III, Brother Martin, do you think he's exaggerating?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think I watched another video, a response of Cardinal Gretsch to another journalist, of him saying that one of their main goals is giving the appearance that they're listening, giving the appearance that anybody who has any idea whatsoever, they're listening to their idea and taking the time to consider it. They want to be a listening church. They want to consider absolutely everything. They want to have anybody who has an opinion to be heard. Of course, you never seen any of these pictures. Anybody in that would resemble a traditional Catholic, so to speak, you know, and of course with Tradiciones Custodes, all that kind of stuff, we know that we're not being listened to at all. And you know, none of our ideas are even being considered, but they want to give the appearance to the world that they're taking all of the ideas and considering them, which is what makes his statement, you know, nothing is off the table, make sense, in the sense that they want to, with their art, give the appearance that they're listening to everybody, they're considering any idea whatsoever. Now, for them, it's easy to defend it, saying, okay, we'll consider it. That doesn't necessarily mean that we'll make any changes because of it. They can say, okay, we'll consider LGBT pride nonsense, but at the end of the day, we're not going to change any of our opinions. Okay, fine. But we know that's not true. Given the Flemish bishops in Belgium that, you know, even proposed to their priests an actual blessing for homosexual couples, and the fact that the Bishop of Rome, the so-called Pope, has not said anything about it, even about the scandal itself, and that even every single one of our bishops, all four of us here and everybody listening, there's not been one bishop that I know of worldwide who has condemned this, who said, if this is what being in communion with the Bishop of Rome means, because in being in communion with the Bishop of Rome, I have to be in communion with the Flemish bishops. I'm not in communion with the Flemish bishops. Therefore, what does that mean? You know, no bishop has spoken out against it. They're complicit. They're complicit in all of it. And so we know this is just a mere strategy, a strategy of allowing those who are dissident Catholics, those who want to promote a progressive agenda, those who want to promote LGBTQ stuff, to have their free voice. Yeah. While you smash the traditional Catholics in promoting Catholic teaching. Case in point, there was an Irish priest, a priest in Ireland, who actually said that sin is sin. And he literally just got dismissed by his bishop. So he gets dismissed immediately by his bishop for saying that two men cannot get married and two women cannot get married. But this is permissible. But this is permissible. And every bishop will say they're in communion with the bishops who say this is permissible. And every bishop will say that this priest's suspension was unjust. That's what we're living in.
I don't think that we can actually say that it is permissible to consider any and all ideas. For example, when you arrive at the truth, the mature mind, the Catholic mind, James, it rests in the truth. You don't endlessly debate things. You don't just drag things up to debate them over and over and over again. And so for these clerics to say, James, that, well, nothing's off the table. Well, you can't start a conversation, a Catholic conversation, by saying nothing's off the table. You have to take error off the table, period. Things that are known error off the table. Things that are known true on the table. That's how a Catholic conversation progresses and commences. And so even for them to say that is in itself such an erroneous position and point of view. It's but I don't think any of them can be retrained.
You bring up a very good point, and this is a point I've been making for about 15 years. There was a problem with how Humanae Vitae was given to the Catholic Church, to the Catholic people, because it definitely went through the process, as you just have described, of leaning into the position that you can maybe have an open discussion about contraception. That's exactly how Humanae Vitae came to us. And it came to us after a long time of people thinking that the church was going to change its position on contraceptives, and of course it did not. And so that long time was enough time to give ammunition to those liberal and progressive bishops and Jesuits who were in control of schools to say the church is trending in this direction and you're going to see a result here sooner than later. And of course, when Humanae Vitae was released to the world, people had a very negative reception to Humanae Vitae. I wonder why. You know, perhaps because they had been primed to expect something else. And so when you're in this position of teaching, when you're in the position of authority, to help people to come to understand the truth and to live it, you can't approach things like this. You can't approach it and say, well, you know, we're open to discussion. Let's discuss. There's nothing to discuss because error has no rights. And this is something the church has been saying for a long time.
Ryan, your reaction or thoughts to the Secretariat of the Synodality Synod basically promoting in a subversive way, using these cartoons, error. I mean, and just really endorsing it.
I guess it's not surprising given what we've seen. And when you're going to constantly, you know, talk and dialogue and all this kind of language, you're necessarily going to end up here, right? Because the talking, it might, as Michael Davies described it, the ecclesia loquens, the talking church, you know, you're just always talking and you're not actually getting anywhere. Like, again, we always hear dialogue for what purpose, to what end? Oh, so we'll understand each other. They already understand what we're at least supposed to be about. And we understand what they're supposed to be about, whether we're talking about dialogue with Muslims, dialogue with pagans, dialogue with, I mean, when you've been dialoguing for 50 years and you're still trying to get an understanding, I would say the dialogue is not working. And then, you know, so now it's hit this new meta narrative where it's dialogue with people carrying out practices that are contrary to the gospel, that are contrary to scripture, that are contrary to the catechism, to all known Catholic, you know, morality, both in theological treatises and the lived witness of the church through her saints, right? And we're gonna talk about it. So I guess I'm not surprised that we've gotten to that point where, oh yeah, all options are at the table. And just look at this disgusting synod art. We did a whole program breaking this down some time ago, where you see this you know, image where, I mean, the not so subtle indication where you look at the left, doctrine, uniformity, charity, liturgy, exclusion, scripture, Catholic identity, fidelity, intolerance, of course. And that's on the side with the white hand. What are they indicating? White supremacy. Whereas then you have the black hand on the other side, diversity, right? And then you got all your diversity messages, you know, unity, being pastoral, inclusion, and all these sorts of things where you're, you know, and this has an official Vatican stamp on it. And, you know, you could see it, you know, right up here. This is something, a message they endorse, they support, they believe in. And, you know, and when Diane calls them out on this, they don't address the nature of this art, why that they've promoted this art. They simply say, we're talking, we got all our options open. And it's essentially what happens when, you know, the dialogue is, it's not really dialogue. It's a predetermined conclusion of where they're going to go and what they want to get out of it. Just like we've seen with all these synods, right? That you had, you know, there was a synod that brought out Amoris Laetitia, for instance. And mm-hmm. That particular synod brought out, you know, cardinals making objections. Well, none of the objections from all these participating bishops and cardinals made it in there. Instead, it reflected what the drafters already had. You had an attempt by several cardinals to get a book, you know, into the hands of all the other cardinals, kind of laying out these issues with infidelity to the church's teaching. And Cardinal Baldessari, who's in charge of this whole thing, grabbed the books and threw them out. Didn't want anyone to get them. So all of these things have a predetermined conclusion, and the listening is just the veneer. It's just where, you know, whatever the excuse is, when they put out art like this, you know, they're telling us precisely where they want to get. And that, of course, is, you know, here, women's ordination, you know, completely support LGBTQ, whatever. Right. And, that making, enshrining that almost like a doctrine of sorts, that's where it's going. And, you know, like the trans agenda and every other aspect of society, it really is, you know, trying to upend all of what we know in society, and they're doing the same thing with it in the church. So it is a global agenda, to confuse people who already are suffering and confused and further victimize them by, you know, causing them to engage in unalterable surgeries to make themselves something they're not, and, you know, further victimizing a lot of those people.
I think to me, it's of course they're doing this. They've always done this. They've always acted indirectly, and they've always, you know, taken the, you know, via implication. But they never really come out directly. If at the conclusion of this synod, though, if they do go direct, if they do go straight for schism, straight for women's ordination, straight for alphabet people, straight for whatever, an attack on marriage and family and children and identity and the principle of identity. I don't know how else to say it, but if that's not the red line, then there is no red line. You know, if we don't say that's the ape of the church, then there is no ape of the church, and there never was going to be one, and that was just a big lie.
Yeah, it clear.
I am not gay. I have relationships with women, sex with men.
And I got news for you. That means you're gay.
I got news for you. I got news for you. If you're hammer fighting at 2 a.m, you're a hammer fighter. It doesn't matter if you hammer fought one time or if you did it until you were 40 years old and then gave it up. You're a hammer fighter. Period. End of story.
Yeah, that gentleman looks very eerily similar to Andrew Gillum from Georgia, and that's all I'm going to say.
What are you, gay?
Oh boy. All right. We have to talk about our next top story tonight, which is actually, it's kind of interesting. I didn't foresee this happening. You know, we make predictions here on the Rundown, and we're batting up, we bat like, I don't know, 950. Okay. We're pretty good at making predictions on the Rundown. We told you there would be a third lockdown. We told you about how the election would go. We told you that they would cancel the March for Life after J6. We told you all that. What we didn't tell you, though, was that the COVIDians, the Fauci's, would come crawling on their hands and knees, James, asking for forgiveness and amnesty. Guys, we just got it wrong. It's okay. We were all scared. I didn't mean to oppress you. I'm sorry your grandmother died alone. I mean, literally, like, how did we get here? This was released in the Atlantic here. It's called Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty by Emily Oster. By the way, Emily has a checkered past herself and a direct connection to top level leftists. Somebody put that together already. James, they're begging for mercy now. They can tell that enough people have had enough with it. And their big claim here, this ought to be the big lie, quote, "We didn't know." Malarkey?
Well, absolute malarkey, you know, and this young lady basically was calling for ways to force people or to impress upon them, you know, with what's the word I need to use here very carefully. She was basically saying there are ways to push people to get this jab, and we have to make sure people are doing it. You know, we can't let people try to argue their way out of it. It has to be done. People are selfish, and there it goes on and on the list of things she was hurling at people who were not taking the jab. People lost their jobs. This is a very painful thing. I mean, we all were going through various forms of persecution, you know, and we were having honest discussions online, and people did not want to hear what the concerns were with these things. They just said, submit or you will be canceled. And she was basically one of those people who were using that rhetoric. And well, no, now,
actually,
all of a sudden,
it's actually, you know, called blackmail. Yeah. It's called blackmail.
Excuse me, I'm here. You don't need to talk down to me. You're calling me a blackmail. I know I'm black. What's going on here? You know,
I really stepped into that one, didn't I? But when you coerce somebody to do something against his will, Brother Martin, when you use force to convince someone to do something. Now, the nice and polite way to say it and to say, oh, it's just my shtick or whatever, is to say, well, I was just incentivizing you, right? This is what they say. I was just incentivizing you to give back every penny. It's not actually blackmail, forcing you to do a thing against your will. Otherwise, if you don't comply, I'm going to use the brutal force that I have available to me.
Make you lose your job. Make you lose your health insurance.
That's a great cartoon, by the way. That's a great cartoon. That's not
blackmail, is it? Yeah. Right? Okay, so we've all lived through it, some more profoundly than others. We have people in the chat who have lived through it, who have lost lots of things in their life, lost their jobs, their livelihoods, their health insurance. They've lost relationships. Some people have lost connections with people, friendships. They've lost loved ones.
Mike, I lost Lissaity. Mike, I lost Lissaity simply because I allowed you to help me with a fundraiser.
You've lost your good name. I've lost my good name, which I have an absolute right to. And yeah. I would say both of us unjustly for standing up against COVID when other news organizations were asleep at the wheel. They were hammer fighters chasing other hammer fighters in airports rather than actually covering the biggest story of our lifetime. I'm sorry. The biggest story of our lifetime is not Theodore McCarrick. Yeah, he's a bad guy, and he did a lot of bad things, and he's probably, I wouldn't want to be him on Judgment Day.
Yeah, it's doubly troublesome that such a thing would be allowed to happen.
Doubly troublesome.
It is, yeah. Yeah, that's almost a triple entendre you did there, but but coercing people, right? Here's the thing. They're asking for forgiveness, Brother Martin, but they're not contrite. You cannot forgive someone against his or her will. So you can't just say, you can't just grant amnesty to people who are actually just psychopathic Nazis who would do it again.
That's right. And, you know, they'll do a lockdown simply if you voted red, you know, in a few days. If you vote red, you'll be locked down again. And this is ultimately their game plan, is to force you to submit to their rule. This is no longer a democracy. And one thing I was thinking about even earlier today, a democracy needs to be defended, and it's not just by voting, you know, because when oligarchy begins to take over a democracy, there has to be people to fight back this elitist group of people from taking over power. For instance, if they're able actually to manipulate votes, you know, send in votes at 3 a.m., all that kind of stuff, or over a few days after the actual election day and steal the vote, so to speak, that itself is a threat to democracy. But who's actually going to step up and do something against it? Who's actually going to step up and take our democracy back? Nobody. We've all grown accustomed to living our comfortable lives.
Just make sure you vote on Tuesday.
Stepping up to take back our democracy might mean dying and leaving your family behind. It might mean giving up a lot of material comforts. But capitalism, our own liberal society in the United States of America, was precisely to make people feel comfortable with their own rights, their own closing circle, their own comforts, their own personal comforts. That if that was the whole purpose of a liberal society, was so that you could have your personal comforts. So when people take over your democracy, you have to choose between your personal comforts or taking back your democracy. And I think a lot of people in the United States aren't willing to make the sacrifice to actually keep a democracy. I think a lot of people are willing to really gaslight themselves, so to speak, and keep convincing themselves that, oh, just next election, we'll just vote harder. Oh, next election, we'll just vote harder.
I'm going to read this quote, Ryan. I want you to react to it. Quote, "The people who got it right for whatever reason may want to gloat. Those who got it wrong for whatever reason may feel defensive and retrench into a position that doesn't accord with facts." All of this gloating and defensiveness continue to gobble up a lot of social energy and to drive the culture wars, especially on the internet. These discussions are heated, unpleasant, and ultimately unproductive. In the face of so much uncertainty, getting something right had a hefty element of luck. And similarly, getting something wrong wasn't a moral failing. Treating pandemic choices as a scorecard on which some people racked up more points than others is preventing us from moving forward. Ryan, we just need to move forward. Move on.
Spare me. The author, among many others, all the way up to Fauci and Trump and then Biden, you know, closed down the country. The health, you know, you know, officials, doctors, hospital administrators, whatever, I mean, carried out immoral decisions that made no sense in standard and established epidemiology. And they all went to groupthink and they followed through doing things that are morally wrong. You made old people die alone. You caused people to lose their jobs. You caused people to lose their livelihoods. You caused people, while sneering at them on the other side of your well-paid journalism, you know, vaunted journalistic, you know, glass, you know, palace, where, oh, look at all those people complaining about losing their jobs. And, you know, all the celebrities that got out there to promote, you know, the message from their, you know, their marble bathtubs who are covered in rose petals, or they send their staff out to, you know, bear the danger of the greatest plague ever, supposedly, to get them Starbucks. These people are guilty of doing things that were morally wrong based on the evidence that was at hand. It wasn't just that they got it wrong. They pursued a message. They vilified everybody who didn't go along with it. They, I mean, including the author of this article, have tweets, they have posts, they say, oh, you know, unvaccinated people are pariahs. They should be treated like pariahs. They should be denied all medical care. Mm-hmm. And we can't let anyone come see your loved ones that are dying in the hospital, you know, because they might get sick. So, you know, and you can't have a funeral, even though we're going to have 10 funerals for George Fentanyl Floyd and so on and so forth. The absurdity, the asininity of everything they did and threw in our faces for that entire time. And now they want amnesty. No, because they're not sorry. They are not sorry. They need to be held to account for everything they did. If even up to and including public gallows, frankly, at this point, guillotines. I mean, that's what we need. We need we don't need amnesty. We need guillotines.
Boom. Love it. We, you know what we need, guys?
What do you think we need to do?
Oh, we need a revolution. And we need it now. Not later. Now.
It's time. Ryan, you're always up first to grift. I don't know if you're ready, though. I gave you no warning.
None. So, I will put this up again. So this is the Give, Send, Go. It's moving apace. And again, thank you to everybody who's contributed to this. We have a first appointment with the Cancer Cure Facility coming up this week. And that's going to be some hefty payments. I'm trying to get certain paperwork in place to get a lot of that taken care of. And then there's other things that I have to, you know, to get in place for my wife, who's still generally disabled. She's still recovering. I mean, she's got a giant hole in her stomach still that it was stapled together. So in her insides, everything's kind of like working out. So I need to pay for in-home care when I have to go to do things, because I still have things to do with my property because my house is still being set up. And I've got a hospital bill the same size as my mortgage, which I should be able to get taken care of with various grants and donations they have. So, but, you know, so all this money, you know, and I've snaked it up as, you know, I look at new things and new bills like anesthesiology. I got to cut a check for like, you know, $5,000 for anesthesiology and because it's separate from the other hospitals. So all, you know, you know, things of this sort. So that money goes to that. It goes to paying back, you know, lost wages when I was caring for my wife before we knew what was wrong, what we had to do, you know, help me get, you know, back on the right footing and paying, because I have two toddlers that want to go jump on mommy, right on her stomach. I caught one of them trying to do that the other day, just kind of busted in. Mommy is super cute, super delightful, but no, bad timing. Don't do that. So if I'm not there, you know, my kids aren't that fast on all the time. You know, they're good kids, but, you know, 15 down to 10 and 9 are not going to be on point 100% of the day. So I do need, you know, caregivers that can help manage them, and I need to pay them, you know, for the time that they're putting in. You know, we've had a lot of help from family up, you know, to this point, and that's really been, you know, beneficial. Had to pay them, you know, a lot of money for what they did for us. Mm-hmm. For like practically a month. And so, yeah, so that's the purpose of the Give, Send, Go. That's where a lot of those checks are being cut in those directions. So Any support you've got, $5, $10. And there's an option on here to pray. You don't have any money because you had to make, you know, very strong sacrificial choices, like not getting the Fauci ouchie and consequently losing your job. So you could benefit from a Give, Send, Go. Just click in and send a prayer, because all of that is needed. And, you know, I mean, there's been so many people that have been praying for us, and you could really feel it. It's just been a huge help. And so, you know, I really incredibly appreciate the incredible support and assistance. You know, I think I mentioned it last week, you know, I had to deal with the very real possibility of being a widow, and we came out of that. Thanks be to God. So, all prayers and support are welcome. And, you know, anything else you want to roll, hopefully I get back on my feet with Mediatrix Press, and like all the projects I was hoping to get done, they're pushed off till January. I might be able to sneak out a book or two before the end of the year, a reprinted book. But look at that. James disappeared. He's trying to escape the unpops.
No, I think he's actually just trying to go to givesendgo.com/G9CPN. That's Golf 9 Charlie Papa November. givesendgo.com/G9CPN is where you can find Ryan's grifts for the week and for the probably for the foreseeable future.
So as you all know, I'm Brother Martin. I'm a founder of a new monastery, the Oblates of St. Augustine. I guess this week I kind of have a humble request to make to all you guys, and it's really just making more our situation known to all of you. As many of you might know, we're taking care of a priest who is in dire need of a life-saving surgery. And in the next coming of months, it might be required of us to actually temporarily move for like 3 months to a city with a hospital that performs this life-saving surgery for him. And it's actually required of us to actually go drive across the country to different hospitals so that he can get testing and see whether or not he's a candidate for this particular surgery so that he can live, because otherwise he just has a few months to live. So within the next few months, we might actually need to be renting an apartment in a different city in the city of the hospital where he would be receiving the surgery. So that, it requires that we prove that we can do that, so that after his surgery, we need to be in that same city for up to 3 months, so that if there's any rejections, all that kind of stuff, if his body's not handling the surgery well, they can deal with it. Obviously, that will require quite a bit of us, so it's St. Augustine, but the Oblates of St. Augustine, at least because of our personal availability, we're totally there to be able to give him 24/7 care, which is something that a lot of people, which is what probably one of the most things that people struggle to find whenever they need these types of surgeries is a 24/7 care. Many of them have to pay thousands in order to be able to have that, but here we are as Oblates of St. Augustine, obviously able to provide that. And for a priest, absolutely for free. It will require us to have to move to a different city and to rent an apartment and whatnot to be able to provide this care for him. And so if you're willing and able to help the Oblates of St. Augustine in their mission, and particularly for our ability to care for this priest and to hopefully give him a chance at being able to be a candidate for this surgery, you can go to www.obletsofstaugustine.com/giving. To be able to help us give ourselves to a priest of Jesus Christ in this way. So www.obletsofstaugustine.com/giving.
Man, you're doing God's work, brother. Not gonna lie. I'm gonna do James's grift. He had to run. He had a jet, but James is gonna grift Catholic audiobooks, and the URL to this is catholicaudiobooks.wordpress.com. This is a place where you can actually go and listen to all kinds of wonderful Catholic audio resources for free. A lot of stuff on here. James is a patron of this site, catholicaudiobooks.wordpress.com. And that's the grifter segment. Guys, it's time for my favorite segment, Ryan. Do you know what my favorite segment is? It's the unpopular opinions. We need to have a, we need like bumper music for the unpops though.
We do.
Like,
we need
the unpops are getting more sophisticated.
This week I'll squeeze in some time and get something made up.
Did you guys see that? I just said, hey, we need something. And Ryan's like, I'm on it. I'm taking care of my wife. I got my 9 children. We're fighting cancer, but I will make that video for you, Mike.
I will do it. All right. So my unpopular opinion, it is that time. It is the time for America's sacrament, the sacrament of the religion of this country, to vote, to go out and cast your vote in a functioning, republic or democracy or whatever, which I don't think they can function beyond a certain size. And I think we're well beyond the size where it can function in reality. But beside that, it's one thing, especially where the laws of the state require you to vote, you know, and it's part of your participation for being a property owner and to take your seat in government, and it's functioning healthy. You know, that makes sense at that level. But when you're in a system such as ours, which is so completely corrupt, and everybody who goes to Washington, if they really mean change, they'll be out of Washington before too long. Because the rules, the way everything's designed, is made to have that happen. So anyone you vote for, you're putting your moral support behind the decisions they take to send more trillions of dollars to Zelensky for his hookers and blow. You're sending more money to all the alphabet causes, all the abortion that this country supports. Your moral voice goes behind all of that. And so I am actually going to argue that at this stage of the Republic, not inherently, but at this stage of the Republic, voting is a sin. It's far from, you know, your duty, that it's a moral obligation to vote. Voting, you know, beyond, like, if you got some local election and you know the person and you can really affect change and you think that could be worthwhile, that's one thing. But otherwise, voting for these politicians that keep doing evil things in the hopes that, well, we need more conservatives because eventually it's going to happen. I'm just going to say it, voting is a sin.
Okay, for my unpopular opinion, Our Lady said that if Russia was consecrated to her Immaculate Heart, there would not be a nuclear war. The fact that we are again facing the possibility of nuclear war is proof that Russia was not validly consecrated. And even more so, I mean, Russia siding with communist China, communist North Korea, Islamic Russia, Islamic Iran. I don't see any confidence in any of their teammates, so to speak. But the very fact that nuclear war is up for grabs and all these nuclear powers are coming face to face with each other, is absolutely proof that whatever consecration occurred by Pope Francis was not the consecration that Our Lady asked for.
You're okay. You're not gonna get COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Yeah.
My unpopular opinion this week is that those who seek amnesty will receive it, and they will receive it from the Republican Party. The GOP is going to grant amnesty to all the Fauci's because, in part, it grants amnesty to themselves for their complicity, but also because, frankly, most conservatives, and even reactionary conservatives or ultra-conservatives or ultra-MAGA conservatives, just don't have the fight for their homeland. They just don't have a connection to their fatherland. We have a tenuous connection, if any, to these lands anyway. We've only been here a couple hundred years. Most of us move around every few years, crossing state lines, crossing time zones. We don't have permanent roots anywhere. We don't have a connection to the land. We don't have historical ties to anything, really. And because we've become homogenized in our culture and we export all kinds of things. No, I mean, the number one thing that we fight for, that we would fight for, is our comfort. But since they've given us our comfort back, at least for now, then people aren't going to fight for it. So this amnesty request, which has been proffered in The Atlantic, much debated online. Lots of people talk big online. They talk a big game. I'll never forget. I'm never going to forgive him. You will. You already have. The fact that we don't have armed rebellion in the streets is proof. The fact that we haven't hung the traitors in the gallows is proof that not only will you grant amnesty, but you have granted amnesty, past tense. That's my unpopular opinion. For it's true, right? It's true. All right, we have three strong contenders this week. Can you only do three on Twitter, or do you have to have a fourth?
You can do just three, I think.
We never actually did the poll last week because it was wrapped up and stuff, and I usually do it. So I could pull James's unpop from last week and, okay, and okay. add it in.
That's a shame because I would have won anyway.
It wasn't on purpose. I'm sorry. I can't completely face it.
That seems like a speculative statement, brother. I'm not sure if you can find that one. I'm just not sure about that. Guys, this is the rundown. We're attempting to be brief this evening. We're making our best attempts at brevity. What do you think about that? You like it? Give us a like, put a comment in there. Thanks for watching.